women's year in Chodesh Halvav Shar HaBechina, Sunday afternoon. Beis Shvat. Beis Shvat, January, whatever it is, 13th, something like that. Okay, so we're trying to develop our sense of gratitude by heightening our sense of our knowledge of what goes on in what goes on. Chavis HaLovas focuses on what goes on in our bodies, and he's moving now to the mind. He's finished listing his understanding of the miraculous workings of the human body, and he's going to go on to the mind. Before he goes on to the mind, I wanted to have another source here from these books. Well, because the last thing he did was the digestive system, so I just wanted to read a little from these series of books here that I told you about: Our Amazing World, Our Wondrous World, and Designer World.
And,
Designer World. It's the three books: of Designer World, Our Wondrous World. It's by the same author, a fellow in England, and Our Amazing World. Just to follow, again, the Chavis HaLovas wrote his sefer when knowledge of the digestive system was pretty rudimentary. So the author here, at one point, talks about, you know, if you ever make a simcha and you have all sorts of food there and you have tables and chairs and you have to hire people to come clean, people eat the food and people have to come clean up. It doesn't happen by itself, right? The furniture, putting everything back in the morning, cleaning up, packing everything away. We know what's involved after we make just a place of kiddush in our living room, or even after every meal, right? We know what's involved. But let's imagine, this is how the author puts it, it's a Friday night, you eat so much food, wine, challah, fish, chicken, kugel, salad, sour pickles, ice cream, dessert, tea, cake, and you're full, and you go to sleep, and you wake up the next morning, stomach's empty, you're hungry. Where did everything go? Who swept, who cleaned, who washed, who removed the litter and put everything away? The teretz is Hashem, that the body works, and you can go to sleep, and everything will be done in the morning. You wake up, your living room is clean and sparkling, and ready for another kiddush. Do not think of your intestines as an elongated tube looping through your body. The most sophisticated food processing plant in existence would be a doll's tea party in comparison to the complexities of the digestive system. Most of the food we eat would be lethal if it entered our bloodstream. The intestines change the highly dangerous to the acceptable, providing food for the trillions of cells and energy for the muscles. Protein in the meat is converted into amino acids, carbohydrates from the kugel into glucose. Without the most complicated chemical processes that take place constantly in the intestines, food would remain undigested, as useless to the body as the food on your pantry shelf. Consider some of the details. The intestines contain cells which produce a special enzyme whose function is to digest protein. Logically, that enzyme should digest the very cell that produces it. That indeed would happen were it not for the fact that the enzymes are made in an inactive form and cannot work until they reach their destined place in the digestive tract, where they are activated by the chemicals present. Trypsin, a substance which breaks down protein into amino acids, is secreted as an inactive substance called trypsinogen. When the trypsinogen reaches the upper reaches of the intestines, it meets a chemical by the name of enterokinase, which converts it into active trypsin. Why does the powerful trypsin now not digest the very walls in the intestine at which it works? Because of the thick layer of mucus that lines the intestines. The average person is blessed with approximately 26 feet of intestine. This great length is required to present a large absorbing surface to the digesting food. This already large surface is increased enormously by one of the most amazing features of the intestine. The lining of the small intestine is covered with millions of minute projections known as villi, V-I-L-L-I. Every single villus is 1/25th of an inch long, and there are 3,500 villi to a square inch, totaling 5 million in all. Each villus is tipped by special cells, which by a process which is not fully understood, absorb about 95% of the nutrients from digested food. Note that the complexity of the process by which the useful substances in the food are absorbed into the blood supply via the outer cells of the villi is so profound that even with the sum total of scientific knowledge available, it is not understood. The next time you hear scientists talking about, with complete assurance, about the events of 200 million years ago, ask them to explain how the villi and their intestines work. The amazing cells are produced at the base of the villi and move to the top. This just goes on and on and on. Nothing stands still in the intestines. The entire length is lined with intricate sets of muscles. One group produces a swaying motion which churns together food and digestive juices. There are 10 to 15 of these swaying motions a minute. Another set of muscles produce a wave-like action. The waves push the contents. Okay, this just goes on and on and on and on. I would love to read it, but, you know, maybe if I would have made copies. Then here he has how to get rid of wastes. Okay, well, that we've studied last week a little. But in our wondrous world, I don't want to bore. Let's see. Yeah, 293 to 297. These are amazing books, by the way, and they're very funny, also. Yeah. One fussy eater per family is hard enough for a mother. Imagine you're cooking for an institution of several hundred hungry individuals, each of whom is fussy beyond description. Too much salt, not enough paprika, don't put mustard. Chont is too watery, put potatoes in the chont. Potatoes in the chont ruin the taste. Lemon juice and the green beans, the list is endless. Imagine now that you're the cook of an institution that has not several hundred members, not even several thousand, but a number so great that the only way you can comprehend it is to say that for each person living in the world, there are 17,000. Which institution has approximately 60 trillion members? The answer is your body, for that is the number of individual cells that you possess, give or take a few million. 60 trillion. Every single cell requires nourishment to allow it to function, but the shopping list of individual tissue and organ cells are by no means identical. Some require protein, others fats, nerve cells need potassium, bone cells require calcium and fluorine, oxygen-carrying cells need iron, copper, and manganese, thyroid cells need iodine. Some cells are looking for vitamins, others for hormones, while others are desperate for enzymes. One cell will want a microscopic trace of cobalt, others want glucose, amino acids, or a simple drink of water. Every cell needs something, and that something is as varied as chalk is from cheese. When you exercise, tissue requirements for just about everything increase enormously. How is this vast distribution system organized? Where are the millions and millions of meals prepared? Who delivers them to the correct destination? And how does each cell know what belongs specifically to it and not to any other cell? When you think of the transport system in the body, you have to think big. It is well known that within every human runs a transport system more than 60,000 miles of route, more than a global airline. An intricate arrangement of pumping from the heart via the arteries and muscular activity, squeezing the veins and pushing the blood upward, guarantees a steady stream of life-giving blood that extends to the very extremities of the network. Okay, that's it. Fresh supplies of oxygen and food are brought in as fast as they are consumed, and poisonous end products are never allowed to accumulate. Never think of your blood as a sluggish river just going along the highways and byways of the main route arteries and little lane capillaries. The intricate pipeline system is so efficient that on average a red cell will complete the circuit of the body in 45 seconds. In slightly over a minute, the complete contents of a 60,000 mile network, which reaches every cell in the body from your earlobe to your little toe, will have circulated not once but twice. No journey would be as event. Take a tiny red blood cell. A single drop of blood contains millions of them. Tiny red blood cell. It has been charged with the task of carrying oxygen from the lungs to the tissues, and on the return journey to carry carbon dioxide from the tissues to the lungs. This little cell has a very distinctive shape, looking like a disc, which has been pressed in on either side like the wheel of a car. This interesting shape has been specifically designed to give it a large surface area so it can absorb more oxygen. It has a most peculiar feature in that it possesses no nucleus. Instead, the inside is filled with a red pigment called hemoglobin, and it is this that gives blood its familiar red color. Hemoglobin is a remarkable substance and is responsible for carrying the oxygen. When red blood cells pass through the lungs, the hemoglobin combines with the oxygen, forming a complex compound. In this form, the red blood cell rushes to the tissues, where another complicated chemical reaction occurs, allowing it to release its oxygen and collect the waste carbon dioxide. One of the vital ingredients of hemoglobin is iron, the reason why iron is so important to our diet. And this just goes on and on and on and on. Okay, just one more. I don't want to have brought this book of Atala. It'll feel bad. I have to respect it. So let me just, a little from Designer World, page 42. Again, it's just, it's the digestive system about the hydrochloric acid and the muscular contractions. The pancreas, the unity, harmony, and cooperation that operates in the body is remarkable. The liver produces bile salts which break big fat globules into minute ones that the pancreatic enzyme can process. Juices are secreted by the intestine wall. Altogether, 2 gallons of digestive juices are produced by the body each day. How it is in the small intestine that the soluble products of digestion are absorbed. Yeah, he talks about bile again. Okay, that's it. We'll stop here with this, with digestion. And when we say Asher Yotzar, we have to have kavana and thank Hashem. And b'chol, the wisdom, complexity, seeing Hashem and everything. This is just one area. But it's always going on. That's what the Chavis Havala said, that he's picking something that's close to us every time we eat. There are nisim going on. Just nisim. How can someone deny Hashem? Like, it's so absurd. Okay, we're going to continue now with the mind. We're still in the Shar HaBechina, the fifth perek. And he's going to talk about the mind now. Till now he talked about the body. Achar kach, when you finish with this, if you have any time left in your life, chashov b'kochos hanefesh. Think of, right now we're in a whole nother world, which is so, you can't even point to anything. I mean, how big is a person's brain? A person's brain, the whole thing is in here somewhere. It's like a little sponge there somewhere. And that contains all the kochos hanefesh, everything, and he's going to list them now. Umakomosam, think about the role they play in your life. Mito alo sa'odan, how they benefit and give a quality to a person. Why our lives are, because we're rational beings. We're always thinking. Kemachshava, that's just, we don't think about this. It's thought, just plain thought. Whatever we're thinking about, we could be thinking about silly things, we could be thinking about, but we're always thinking. Our minds are working, our minds are processing information. I'm not talking about creativity or memory or reasoning, you know, deductive reasoning, inductive reasoning, just machshava. A baby 1 day old is already, his mind's working, he's thinking, he's forming images, he's processing them. Maybe he's not conscious of baby 1 day old, but then he's, so hamachshava means thought,
thought. Bazikaron. So this is how the Chavis Halavus lists it. He lists it as thought, which is machshav. Again, achakach hashav b'kochos hanefesh u'makomosom, and their place mito'alos ha'odom, in benefiting mankind. K'machshava, thought. Bazikaron is memory, the ability to remember. Bahashikha, the ability to forget. He is going to delve into each one in his Shar HaBechina methodology and show you how amazingly, what an amazing tova this is for a person, and how, you know, we take this for granted, but it's, if it doesn't work, then our lives would not be lives. He'll explain, like, what happens if you wouldn't have any memory. We're not talking about I can't remember the name of the guy I meet in the street and I met him 27 years ago. We're talking about you don't remember where you live. Maybe you don't even... Rahman al-Islam, you know, we know people who will repeat a sentence 3 to 4 seconds after they've just said it because they don't remember having said it, and they don't remember the names of their dearest ones. It's very painful to everyone. They don't remember your name. They don't remember who you are. They don't remember that they said the words, right? And this is all memory. And then forgetfulness is a tremendous tova, as the Chavis Halavus explains. Otherwise, we would walk around depressed because of all the things that happened in our lives. And it's a bracha from Hashem that the memory of it fades away as time goes on. We forget, meaning it's not uppermost in our mind. It never fades away totally, but we wouldn't be able to function without the matana of shikha. In all these things, in the Chavis Halavus, as we'll see now in the next few lines, he doesn't talk about, which I did a little of in memory. He doesn't talk about the biological. You know, still now we talk biology, how everything in the body works. Now, I don't know what they knew in his days. I guess they didn't know much. They just knew a person has a koach of memory. But now, we could dissect memory like you dissect the digestive system. They have mapped out the brain, and they have mapped out the electrical impulses and how memory works and different areas of the brain and different types of memory and mamish how it works. And they could, like, so you could... We could talk about memory, first of all, from a purely biological perspective, which Chavis Halavus doesn't even do. He just talks about what a tremendous tova it is for a person, and how would we survive without memory? And Hashem gave us the gift of memory. He doesn't even talk about that memory is at least as complicated as the digestive system in its biological, physical, so to speak. Yeah, not so to speak. It's physical. And that's why a lot of things which were just relegated to the realm of mental illnesses in the past, even as recently as 100 years ago, you know, they just locked people up and said they're crazy. But now they are able, a lot of it, not everything, but they see different, that they're able to go into the brain and they give medicines because it's physical, it's like biological. They see the workings of the brain and the chemical imbalance, and a lot of it is true, a lot of it works. So Chazal's not even talking about, so again, he's not talking about memory and forgetfulness mitzad the biology shebo. Maybe he didn't know it. I don't know what they knew then and what they didn't. But we could do that, but we're going to follow the Chavis Halavus, which just talks about the amazing matana that it is. I did it a little, maybe we'll do it a little. Just what a matana it is to our lives. So we have machshava, thought, zikaron, memory, v'shikha, forgetfulness, boshes. Only a human being feels ashamed. It's a matana from Hashem that we're ashamed, and that stops us from doing... It's okay, nobody has to admit anything, but it stops us from many things we would do if we wouldn't be embarrassed of being caught, or even embarrassed from Hashem, you know. The Chazal describe Yiras Hashem as Busha, right? Laman Tia is Yiras Hashem al Pneichem. It says by Matan Torah, Hashem is giving you the Torah so that you should have Yiras Hashem al Pneichem on your face. The Gemara says, what does that mean? Zuha Busha. It means you're embarrassed to do things in front of Hashem. But it's the midah of being embarrassed. And as the Amora said, the Bichon and Zakkai, halavai we should be embarrassed from Hashem as we're embarrassed from people. But embarrassment is a very, very powerful force in our lives, and it saves us from much evil, from many things that we would do if we wouldn't be embarrassed.
Isn't it also a form of kapara?
What?
That a person undergoes humiliation and shame and embarrassment.
Yeah, but he's talking about the... Well, we'll see. He's gonna, everything here will be elaborated upon. I'm just talking about busha as a preventative thing, that you don't want to get embarrassed. But that's the koach of busha. If we wouldn't get embarrassed, obviously there would be no fear of getting embarrassed. The haseichel, that's... Machshava was thought. Seichel is our reasoning abilities. We're creative. We reason. We deduct things. We figure out things. We are maven dover and mitoch dover. Seichel, good old fashioned seichel. What? Everything is seichel. We would be nothing. Again, he's going to elaborate on everything. The hadibur, he talks about dibur. Before, he talked about dibur as the biological dibur with forming consonants and vowels. Now he's talking about that link. And we all know that vahi adam nefesh chaya ruach mamalala, that there's an amazing link between the seichel and the... But everything is really... speech is special, but every time we move, there's a link between our heads, and our heads are controlling our muscles, and there's electrical connections, and there's all sorts of things going on. But he talks about Dibur b'miyuchad. Now, what's the first bracha in Shmona Esrei? Meaning after the first three. We say, Atachonim l'adam das. We ask Hashem we should be sane, we should have a sane mind. And again, you just have to go to a hospital, Rahman al Islam, if you don't realize the matana in it. You see people like, I grew up, you know, on the Lower East Side. There are a lot of broken people from the war, or some broken people because of the poverty in which they lived. And they, you know, so as kids you make fun of them, but you think about it, people walking around the street, you know, just talking to themselves. And they're muttering to themselves, and we had big ladies that all their worldly possessions were in, you know, a shopping cart, a vegala, they had everything. There's one lady grabbed in Sanhedrin now who has all her life possessions. You can tell, like her whole life is in that shopping bag, in that shopping cart. And she walks around Nebuch, and you know, so you know, when kids, we made fun of them, but it's really, so you say, well, Baruch Hashem, I'm saying, Atochoni l'ndasim, and this is the only bracha that starts off, the Shmona Esrei starts off with praise of Hashem. Akel, Hagadol, Hagibor, this is really the only bracha that starts off with its own praise of Hashem. It's Atochoni l'ndasim, we start off, we say, Hashem, you give a person seichel, please. And then we talk about the different kinds of seichel. You know, Deya Bina V'Haskel, which is different creative thought, deductive reasoning, etc., etc. What's the point of the declaration? It's not so clear. Probably, Rabbi Avigdor Miller Zatzal suggests that just like at times it's hard to thank Hashem for our existence, because that's like, I am, I exist. We feel entitled automatically because I am, because we can't imagine ourselves not existing. So you say, oh, thank you, Hashem, that I exist. I mean, we should, but we take it for granted that we're here because I'm thinking. So if I'm thinking, I'm here. So that's a given. So he suggests that we take for granted all too often our rational faculties, because it's so basic, like we wouldn't exist without that. Like Of course I have to have seichel. It's an inseparable part of who I am, is my ability to think and my ability to reason. That's me, so that's automatic. But it's not like that, right? Go look at mentally deficient people, people with all sorts of issues, people that don't think rationally. People that don't think rationally. I remember once we were dealing with someone to try to get him to give a get to his wife, and someone that's meant. So he was sane enough to be able to do it, because Rahman al-Islam, if you dip below a certain point, you can't even give one. You're not mentally competent. It's like you can't sell something, you can't buy something, you can't give a get either. That's a huge tragedy. I mean, that's a tragedy. I mean, that's like having a husband lost at sea, you know, and he's gone and there's nothing you can do. You can't prove he died. What are you going to do? So it's rare, but it happens. And so, but this husband was above that red line, but it was just impossible to reason with. And like, you wonder sometimes, is he above that red line? Because he's just not rational. Like, nothing you say, or there's no convincing him to do anything. Like, everybody has a certain button you can push, and you can get him to do something because of consequences. Right? This is all the human mind. Right? Consider consequences. Some people can't consider consequences. I mean, we're all like that a little, because we all do averus. And if we would consider the consequences of an avera, we would never do an avera. So we're all a little detached from consequences. But other people are detached from the consequences of walking out in the street without looking to see if a car's coming. And some people have very destructive behavior, and they don't... The consequences of what they're doing to their family and to themselves and to their spouses and to their children, just... There's just some disconnect there. But the point of my story is that we were sitting around. I used to deal with these things in Muncie. And we were having like a strategy session. And I remember we had Professor Tversky on the phone, the law professor. He was helping us out. What? Yeah. So we had him on the phone. And we're thinking, we'll do this. He says, you fellows are making... you're making a big mistake. You're trying to project rational thought onto an irrational person. Like, we're all rational. So saying, okay, we'll do this, so then he'll respond this way. But you're wrong, because you're rational. So you know that if you do this, this is the way you respond. But you're dealing with an irrational fellow. You can't outsmart an irrational person, because his mind's just totally not there. His mind is in a different dimension, and you can't. And the biggest mistake you can make is trying to figure out how his mind works, because that's also you're doing with your rational faculties. you know, you're trying to figure out how a irrational person's mind works. He says that by definition, that's an impossibility, because you're doing it with your rational mind. So he said, so we'll try different things, but there's no point in making any plans. Because planning presupposes a premise of rational thought, so you can plan. But if someone's not rational, he says, well, we're wasting our time planning. We should just try this and try this, and then maybe something will work.
Who makes the determination
if
he's above that?
Oh, a Besdin has to. I've been in mental hospitals talking to people, and you talk to them, and there is a lot of halachic, you know, there is quite a body of halachic literature that sets the criterion for mental illness of that red line. To what degree? And there's a lot of tshuvas on it, and I studied it, and you know, you have to know it. And, you know, we've been in places talking to people, and there's you have questions you ask. Basically, it's if a person, I don't want to oversimplify or even simplify, but it's things like if the person would be able to take care of himself, if he would like cross a busy street without looking in the street, if he would do dangerous things, if he would do self-destructive things. The Gemara considers self-destructiveness as a sign of severe mental illness, but you know, nowadays, it's funny, because it's not funny, like, in a certain sense, whenever I do an Avera, I'm doing something self-destructive. And then you think, hey, Chazal indeed said, "Ein adam chotei elam kein nichnas bo ruach shtus." And all of a sudden I understand that Chazal, because I'm doing something self-destructive, and that's irrational, and I'm being a shote. I'm exhibiting mental illness. Hey, indeed. There's halachic literature, just like everything in the world has halachic literature in it, on it.
But you consult the psychiatrists as well? Or?
We consult, but they're not talking the same language we are. If they went to college and they went and they studied, you know, Freud and his Talmidim, they usually are speaking a different language. It's wonderful if you speak to a Frum person who, there's someone, Amzel, who wrote books, Rational, Irrational Man, and he wrote two books on this Inyan. There are books written about this, Rabbi J. David Bleich, who wrote on everything, who writes on everything, Baruch Hashem, he's alive and kicking. He has, it's out there, Ramosha, remember, we once weren't sure if a certain medicine brought the person back to his rational faculties, or it just was like an adrenaline, and it wasn't really the person. It was just like a outside stimulus, but the person was still mentally ill. So we went to Ramosha with that tshuva. So God, in that particular case, in that particular mental illness, in that particular medicine, after talking to the relevant parties, doctors, he said that the medicine is just restoring him to his natural self. But yeah, that's a whole area. Anyway,
did you get
I know I hate to do this, but I don't even remember. I assume so. I assume so because I remember our failures. I remember our failures. Baruch Hashem, we had a pretty big success rate. So, it's not really, I mean, it's success at the end of the day. Sometimes it went on for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And sometimes, I mean, again, a lot of times you're dealing with it. Most of the time when it was, you know, it went on over a year, it's because you're dealing with irrational people. And then you start worrying. Watch your language, Rabbi. If you say the guy's nuts, then he can't give a get. You got to be careful. You say, no, I'm talking like a balabas. I'm not talking technically that he's nuts. He's not technically nuts. He's just nuts. But we're all a little nuts. Like I say, you know, we all do self-destructive behavior. Even in, forget about our virus and our homes and our kids. You know. That's anyway, atoch honi lodam das, you say Hashem, you give seichel. Seichel is not automatic. It doesn't come along. It's not in the package of life. You can be alive and be irrational. You can be alive and be insane. And now, for better or for worse, we have books and books and books of all types of mental illness. And I think it's a bracha that so many of them are like shifted to a physical thing in the brain, where they deal with it from the physical angle, not from, and a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists, you know, do a little of both, a little therapy and a little this, and you take a certain pill, and then we, you know, we hear someone's on a pill, we run the other way. But I don't know, you know, if someone takes a pill, because they have, I guess we run the other way. If anything, someone has diabetes and they have to take a pill, they have to take insulin. So we also run the other way. I'm talking about shidduchim. But it's not, you know, I think it's a good thing that if the more we see it as a physical thing, the less scary it is. And then okay, it's like a physical thing. If the guy has pneumonia, he would do this. If the guy has a wound on his foot, he would do that. So this person has a wound in his brain, and the chemicals are not working properly. Yeah, but it's Shah HaBachina. It's really Shah HaBachina. So Rabbi Miller points out that it's the only bracha where we, he says it raises our awareness that it's not, it doesn't automatically come along with being alive, with existence. We say, Atah Chonein Lodam Das. We declare, and this is what we're doing, and this is what you should have in mind, he says. We declare, you give us Das. You give it. It's not automatic. It's not part of the package of life. It's not part of the package of existence. People, Rachmana Litzlan, are insane and they're irrational, and they exist in worlds of their own, and they have voices, all sorts of things. So you give it. You give rationality. You give sanity. And then we say, and then we thank Hashem. And again, when you say, and this is first. And that's what the Gemara says. This is first, because without this, you have nothing. Without da'as, you're nothing. You're a blabbering idiot. What's the point of anything? You can't. Imein bina havdala minayin. You have to first to talk about da'as before you can make havdala. Because, right, the ability to discern differences is a major mark of rationality. You talk to irrational people, they don't see the difference between doing this and doing that, and they start arguing with you, and you don't even understand where they're coming from, because they compare apples and oranges all the time. And this is a bracha. We thank Hashem. We have to be modal Hashem. Machshava, even a baby has. A baby looks at you, and the cup arbit, his head's working, her head's working, and it's doing whatever it's doing. But they know for sure that the baby starts thinking, and the machshava is working from the moment it's born, maybe even before. Then we'll talk about memory. That was number two. Shikha is the ability to forget, because, you know, we say in Psuki de Zimra, Harofe lishvure lev umachabesh liatzol sam. Hashem heals the brokenhearted. And Nebuch, people have things occur to them in their lives which break their hearts. And Harofe, Hashem is merape shvure lev, brokenhearted people, umachabesh, and he's merape laatzol sam, to their sin, is their grief. And many times it's through the koach of shikcha. Sometimes they see that it was for the good, but many times it's just an erasure of unpleasant memories. I mean, I was bullied as a kid one summer in camp. I remember this a couple of years ago. I have repressed it probably. And I remember now, like it's a very painful memory. Baruch Hashem, I obviously I repressed it. Maybe that explains a lot of my behavior. I don't know. But one summer I was tortured by another boy in camp. I was bullied and tortured, and he made fun of me, and he got everybody else to make fun of me. This is going back a lot of years. But I just remembered it. That's what Chazal is saying. It's a bracha that I totally forgot about it, and now I'm remembering it when it's not, you know, it doesn't do me any harm anymore. But that's dangerous, Grado, because repressed trauma and repressed bullying is sometimes the cause of major mental illness and all sorts of. But Baruch Hashem, I don't think to me, maybe it did. I mean, you have to ask my wife. But that's harofer lishvurei lev. I mean, I have a sister who lost a child, right, in a car accident, her oldest child. So imagine if she would always have to live with the grief that she felt during Shiva. I mean, she's out of her mind. You can't live with that. So Hashem makes, that grad is a fair of Chazal, that there's a bracha that Hashem makes, Shehameis Yishakach Min Halev. And Adarabba, Yaakov Avinu sort of felt that Yosef must be alive because he keeps grieving for him. And he's not forgetting him. So like there's a special matana to forget the dead, and the memory fades away. And life goes on. People remarry and people find, you know, and then they get rid of their grief. It's a bracha. We have to shar habachina. Thank you, Hashem. If they'd remain with their grief, they would be takua. They wouldn't be able to function. They wouldn't be able. Their life would be over. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes people can't deal with their grief. They can't get over their grief. They remember their grief. They feel they're betraying their loyalty to the person if they remarry, if they forget, if they don't grieve. And Rachmana Litzlan, they need a good therapist to tell them, and a from therapist, saying, look, take out a Chovas Halvavos and say, it's a Matnas Hashem.
It's a matana from Hashem that you forget and you go on with your life. That person died, not you. Okay, and then there's shame, which we'll talk about, and then there's reasoning and speech. Okay, let's start with memory. Tireh, look, consider, imagine. If yechzer la'odam me'elu hamidos, there's so much more. I mean, we could make a list of what the mind is able to do, like with 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 things. The Chavir Lovers listed five things. He says, if he'd be missing just memory, how would he be able to exist? How much hefsed, he would be ruined, he would suffer. And all his affairs, I mean, Rechmana Litzlan, we know this. You see people in the street, you see an old man in the street, where do I live? You know? Where do I live? Meanwhile, he's next door. He walked from his house to the shul, he can't go home again. He forgot. And worse, you know, worse. So I had a grandmother. I grew up with two mothers because my grandmother lived with us her whole life. My parents' married life was with my grandmother because my grandfather died pretty much right away, almost. And they took in my grandmother. And my father was a tzaddik, not like me. And he lived with his mother-in-law his whole his whole married life. Till the Kamat, and I grew up with two mothers. Look at that! Imagine that, right? This one's, you know, you want to sleep late in the morning. If one doesn't get you, the other one does. but she became senile eventually. They didn't call it Alzheimer's then; they just called it good old senile. And you know, it's tough. It's tough, especially the person taking care of them, and they don't remember who they are. And they don't remember what day it is, and they don't remember when they last ate. How do you deal with that? They accuse you of trying to starve them because they want to eat, and they just ate like a half a minute ago. It's one of the slums. What?
My husband's grandmother also has no short-term memory. She can't read a book. She turns the page.
So Shar HaBechina says, instead of just looking at it as, oh boy, that person is ill, we should... That's what Shara Bechina, that's what we're learning for, to say, thank you, Hashem. I have memory. It's not automatic. It's not something to be taken for granted. It's something to be thankful for, to feel gratitude. K'she'enu zocher mashayeshlo, a person wouldn't remember what he has, or mashayesh olov, he wouldn't remember anything. Mashalokach, what he gave, what he took. Mashanasan, Mashara, what he saw something a minute ago he doesn't remember. Mashashama, he's depicting in his terms, very rudimentary, right? It's 1,000 years ago, over 1,000 years ago. He's saying he wouldn't remember anything. Mashama, he wouldn't remember what he said. Mashanemar, he wouldn't remember what was said to him. He's already talking now, sophisticated. He wouldn't remember who was good to him, right? His enemy and his wife is the same, because he doesn't remember. He doesn't remember. He doesn't remember that this is the person that was so mative to him, or vice versa. Umi Sheheralo, he wants to stay away from his enemy, he doesn't remember. Umi Huilo, who did him favors. Umi Shiziko, who was an enemy. Eni Yodei Haderech, and Dorach Lopam Rabos, he wouldn't remember the way home, even though he walked it so many times, he doesn't remember how to get home. Well, Yizkor Chochmo, he wouldn't remember any knowledge. And Miegeba Kol Yomov, even though he studied it his whole life. And this is something you have to see Hashem for. You have to thank Hashem for. And it's amazing because we could smell something. I could smell a pickle and I'll remember the Holy Side with Gus's pickles and my whole childhood. That smell will trigger my memory. Like very, very complex koach. Maybe we'll go into it next time.